I was also shooting AKs, for example. So my dad actually let me pull the trigger on the training field, you know, so not full automatic. We were shooting semis, but still that was also an experience to me, you know.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. Andrei's father served with the Soviet Army in East Germany. He grew up on a Soviet military base and shares his childhood memories as East Germany began to disintegrate. So, would you like one of those Cold War Conversations coasters you keep hearing me talk about? It's easy. Just sign up to Patreon, and for the price of a couple of coffees a month, you'll be helping to cover the show's costs and keep us on the air. Plus, you get that coaster too. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate. So, back to today's episode. Andrei's father was a lieutenant in signals stationed at Rudersdorf and Prenzlau Soviet bases. He provides a fascinating child's eye view of life on the base and in his East German kindergarten, as well as insight into the changing mood of some of the East German population to the Soviets as East Germany began to disintegrate. Next week, there'll be a second episode with Andrei where we hear his experiences as a child refugee in West Germany after the wall fell. Make sure you're subscribed via your favourite podcast app so you don't miss that. I'm delighted to welcome Andrei to our Cold War conversation.
I was born on February 26, 1984 in Ukraine. Or former Soviet Ukraine, said like that, in the city of Mogilev-Podolsky, which is in the Vinnytsia region. It's more to the west.
Your parents, what was their occupation?
So my mom was working at the, there's a factory which was producing a lot of mechanical and electronical parts for the civilian market, and also dealing with government requests such as for submarines and say like for the defense sector. And my mom was actually in charge of the documentation. She was the head secretary in charge of the orders and so on. She had access to classified documents, etc. And my dad was prior going to the army. He was in the Navy, but the civilian Navy. So he was actually traveling a lot around. He went, he was in Odessa, stationed in Odessa. And he was a mechanic and chief. So he was, he had two jobs at once. And he was also at the 24th Soviet Antarctic Expedition. And he traveled all over the world with the ship. So he was in Cape Town, Maputo, everything in Africa. He went over to Rio de Janeiro and everything in between. And my mom was also traveling in almost all republics of the former Soviet Union.
Wow. But your father, it sounds like, was far more well-traveled than most Soviet citizens.
Yes, that's true, because he had the opportunity to go to other countries. And the ship which he was traveling with was the Bashkiria. So it was a civilian cruise, but they also deliver it from time to time special equipment such as for measurements and so on to the Antarctic. And he was there at the Soviet station Mirny and in Bellinghausen. So he was actually traveling there around, and he had the opportunity to see way more than others in the Soviet Union. That's true.
Yeah, yeah, because I was aware there was a Soviet base in the Antarctic, and presumably his ship was involved in resupplying them.
They were doing resupplying, but as I mentioned before, it was a lot of the dry food, you know, like the MREs, meals ready to eat, and he told me like just, when was it, a couple of years ago, I was asking him what kind of devices did you actually deliver, and he told me that there was straight civilian, just for measurements of the temperature. There was also like some other interesting things which were done for scientific researchers, so nothing military. I assume they had something military, but the things which were actually delivered by that ship were mostly civilian.
Right. And you mentioned that your father transferred from the merchant navy to the army. Was he conscripted into the army, or was that volunteering?
Volunteering, not conscripted. He just had my mother, when he met my mom also told him, like, you know, it would be a good thing to try to go abroad, for example, to a different country where the Soviet forces were staying. So all over in Eastern Europe. But she said, like, let's try to go to East Germany. And he actually joined in the military. Everything was actually working fine out. And after he joined the military, he was going through basic training. And then they moved actually to East Germany.
Okay. And where in East Germany did they move to?
At the beginning, it was like this, that my dad was stationed not far away from the headquarters of the Soviet troops stationed in East Germany. It was Wunstorf. And then later on, we were like in Rüdersdorf and Prenzlau. So all over the place.
Right. And what was your father's rank and role in the Soviet army in East Germany?
My dad was a lieutenant, and he was he had a lot of it was actually mainly with communication, so basically nothing counter-espionage, but establishing communication between units, etc.
Right. Okay. and what did your mother end up doing when she was in East Germany?
This is a very interesting story, because not many people can actually I don't love to brag with stuff, but this is what I actually can brag with.
Go for it.
my mom was so just prior moving to East Germany, what happens is, when I was born, my dad was on a ship, and my mom sent him actually a telegram. So what happens is, my dad actually found out that he knew that I was born, but he was on a race for almost 4 months. So I still have the telegram at home. That's a very interesting thing. And then,
oh wow!
What happens is that after he arrived in Ukraine, we moved then to East Germany. And my mom was actually as a member of armed forces officer or armed forces a member in East Germany, there was not a lot of to do in the garrison. So there were like some jobs and everything, but everything was small. And my mom recognized one thing that she explained to my dad, that let's try one thing. I will try to get a job on a German VEB, it calls Volkseigener Betrieb. Back in the days, East Germany, everything was like owned by the government. And it was actually a sugar company. They produced sugar. So my mom, before talking to the Germans, she had one thing in mind: to get me into a German kindergarten so I can learn German. And but there was no special law in regards for service members or military family members to work in a German company or in a German company. So she went to the commander in Wunstorf and asked him, is there any law saying that I'm not allowed to work for the Germans and just get my kid to a German kindergarten? So the commander said, we have nothing against it. I mean, like, there's no law which just tells you it's forbidden. Try your luck. So my mom went to that company, to this factory, and she asked if it's possible to start to work. So the Germans, the East Germans, said, like, of course, no problem. So my mom received actually the documents, special IDs, etc. And once she got the job, she actually went back to the base, and a lot of officer wives and regular soldier sergeants, you know, like their wives were doing nothing. So basically, they were just sitting on in the base and just doing nothing and just waiting till the husband is coming back from service and so on. So my mom actually told those girls and women, and she actually brought around, what is it, like around 35 women to the company. So they were actually working on a German company. And then what happens is once my mom started to work there, she received the permission for me to get into the German kindergarten. So I was actually, my dad was the entire day at service. My mom was working till like 3-4 o'clock, and I was in the kindergarten. So everything was working fine out. And the funny thing is, because she was actually earning more than my dad. She was a civilian, but she earned way more than my dad. And that actually helped a lot, because like I got into the German language and so on, getting the mentality after a while. You know, I was a kid, but still, it was actually a very good time.
And what was it? I mean, presumably you were the only Russian or Soviet child in this kindergarten.
We had also other kids there, and it was sort of for the German, the teachers, which actually took care of us.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War, because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
Someone were very nice and pretty cool to us because, you know, like kids and so on. But there was one lady, she just couldn't stand me and some other kids. And she closed me in the restroom and turned off the light and left me there like for 3 hours. For a long, long time. So when I just got into it, and my dad actually visited the kindergarten around 10 o'clock. So he told me that too, that he couldn't see me. And I was like, where's Andre? Because my dad spoke back then, he speaks now German, but back then he learned German, and she was actually afraid. So they pulled me out of the restroom and I was crying. So what happens is you can just imagine she was very scared, because the next day what my dad did actually, they took a truck completely with soldiers and so on, and they pulled over to the kindergarten. So she was thinking they're coming for her, but that was just like saying, okay, woman, just stop doing it, you know.
Any idea why that was? Was that because you were Russian or Soviet?
No, you know, you have in every family some weird people, you know, like maybe her father or grandparents or somebody was, you know, like had some bad experience in the Eastern Front or something, you know, like it happens, you know. This is I will never know about that, but maybe she had something against us, you know, who knows. But most Germans, or 99.99% of the people who we knew, they were very nice, because they treated us like not even as a rank. Like they didn't even see who my father was or my mom. They treated me like the other kids, like the Germans and so on. You know, like very familiar relations. You know, like they hugged me, they talked like, oh, you're so cute kid and so on. You know. Like, so nothing bad. This one woman, I don't feel bad for her, because like I don't know what her past story was, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
no.
I wouldn't judge her, not at all.
No, understood. Understood. I mean, what was your parents' view of the Soviet regime at the time?
No, you know, I can actually start from my family history. My grandpa, he was there were like several brothers, and one of them said in the beginning, when the communist regime was established in the former Soviet Union on all territories, he said something like a joke, like, how to translate that? That would be something very interesting to hear. He's seen a poster, you know, like those propaganda posters. And they say like, communism is heaven, something like that. Mm-hmm. So he mentioned something like, I'm a sinner, like I have many sins. So what happens is I will probably never see the heaven, the same as I will never see the real communism.
Right.
And there were some people, back then they call it the Troika. So you had three people who were actually, if they wrote a paper to the local secret police, to the NKVD, they said, like, we heard he was saying that, so they could arrest him and actually shoot him. So this is what actually happens. So they arrested him at 3 o'clock at night, left wife and was like six children without father, and they moved him actually to Astrakhan, and just in Russia. And late 50s, so after the death of Stalin in 1953, my grandma received a document. She received the document that he actually, he died of, he had some problems with the lungs. But at the same time, there were also other people which were actually deported from the city. And one was actually a neighbor of my family. And he told there were like two camps, the northern camp and the southern camp. The northern camp, this is where the one guy was. And he said like there was one night, there was a lot of shooting going on. So the next day when they moved down the hill and they walked by this southern camp, the gates were open and everybody was gone. So what they did is they actually shot everybody. And this one relative of ours, he was also shot. And my grandpa, during the war, he never said anything bad about Stalin in general. And about the regime, he was doing his job. So his job was to defend the motherland and so on. Mm-hmm. And my mom also asked my grandpa a lot of stuff. And my parents were never against the regime in terms of course they did something, of course every regime is doing a lot of things, but and I wouldn't say that we were like in a higher caste, like a higher group of, you know, like the people, very high ranked people or politicians, they had like some privileges. Yeah. No, we were regular people. My parents were absolutely regular people, and my mom was working, that my dad was going around with the ship and traveling. And that was also like because he was doing the tests and et cetera. And they were never negatively saying anything. The only thing is just because of my relative who was shot, that was the only thing. But they never actually mentioned that in terms of like, you know, this happens and we can't do anything about that. That was a different time. It was very strange time like that.
absolutely. So just going back to your immediate family, did you have brothers and sisters as well?
Yes, I have a brother. He is older than me, and he was going to the sports school. He was champion of the of county and state in boxing. And he was, I say, like, he is one of the rebellions. So he was already, when I was actually living in East Germany, he was with my grandma in Ukraine. And he have seen this entire changes in the 80s coming on. So he have seen that movement in Ukraine, you know, like, how people were actually already like preparing for independence, etc. Mm. So my brother was actually sort of also in that involved, say it like that, a little bit. So this
right,
but That's it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. So when you were living in East Germany, what sort of accommodation were you living in?
We were living, so when we just arrived, what happens is in the base, there were not enough places. So they sent my dad, me, my mom, and my brother, because he was for the couple of months in East Germany, and then he moved back to Ukraine and then got back again to East Germany. So we were living in barracks, army barracks, and they were quite, well, they were, say it like this, they're not bad, but I wouldn't say it's something good. Yeah.
Would you say they were pretty basic?
Spartanic.
Yeah.
Yes, they were very basic. And my dad was there for a while. And then after that, he actually received the orders to move to a house. In this house, we had, I think it was like 4 or 5 families. So it was in the base, on the base. And the house was almost in the center next to the woods and was actually very beautiful. And I just, I remember a lot of, even though I was a kid, small guy, I remember the house. It's just like yesterday. It's weird.
Yeah. It's amazing how some things from your childhood just seem, you know, like it was yesterday. Yeah. And what was it like living on a Soviet military base as a child? I mean, was there a lot of security, or what was it like?
You will laugh, but it was actually a very friendly environment. It was more like a family. You could divide, you had the snobs, so the fly boys, actually the guys from the Air Force. They were pretty nasty, honestly. So we were actually, my dad was stationed for like 2-3 months on the base, where most guys were either helicopter pilots or MiG pilots. So those people they're flyboys. They're very snobby. And we were then moved to a unit of special forces and tankers. So they were combined on one base. And those guys were actually pretty awesome because, you know, kids were actually on the base. You could walk around. No, there was no, nobody checked you. I mean, like, they knew you all because you're the kid, you're living there, and there were no regulations in terms of course, you couldn't go to the warehouse and pull out some stuff. Of course not. But the army base, and I can also tell you a little story about that. It's also something which I remember, and my parents still laugh about it. The guys were actually very friendly. So when a kid was crying, for example, next to a building or anything, and soldiers or officer passed by or walked by, they come up. There's like, what happens, kid? Where's your mom? Where's your dad? Why do you cry? You know, like they were very like, it was more like a big family. And of course, the garrison, you couldn't just walk out because you needed to have, for example, orders while you're going out of the base. The base was pretty closed in terms of that soldiers were not permitted to go out, for example, just to the city or anything like that. They had free time, but most of the time they were walking with another, for example, an officer or somebody, and they walk through the city and stuff like that. But the base itself was very secretive for Germans. But for the people who lived on the base, it was actually more like a family.
Right. So the Soviet army in Germany was kept very separate from the general East German population in the main.
Yes and no. Most of the army bases, they were either somewhere next to a city or like mostly to cities. Like in Rudersdorf was, it is actually a small town, and the base was just less than 1.5 kilometers from the town. It was in the woods, and that was former one of the army bases, or not army, was the Waffen-SS was stationed there. So after the Soviets took over the base, they converted it, of course. And other bases were basically like, for example, if you take Bielitz, this is one of the biggest military hospitals in East Germany for the Soviet army. It was actually Bielitz, and the army base was very close. So you could actually walk out and you're already in the city. You could walk around and so on. So, of course, if you had free time, you were permitted to go out, but it was very strict with the timing, you know, like you needed to be back in that time and so on. So,
okay. Okay. And obviously, with you being in an East German kindergarten, you were outside the base for your education by the sound of it.
Yes. I was actually, my mom was actually riding a bike because my dad was already from 4:30 on service, you know, on duty. So my mom, she had a bike, and there was a little seat for children. So we were actually riding for 1 hour from the base because it was far away from the other city. It was close to another city, but the one place where my mom worked was 1 hour away. So every morning I was actually sitting there, and my mom was riding the bike, bringing me to the kindergarten, kissed me, of course, hugged me, walked to work, and I was actually there for the entire day. So,
okay. And did you have German, East German friends then?
Yes. We there were a lot of kids which were playing with us. We were actually also, they done a lot of sightseeing. So we went to Ukazee. It's in Prenzlau. It's also like you could actually go there. So that was actually where the Zuckerfabrik was, so the sugar factory, something like that. And Prenzlau is actually very beautiful, and they have a very big lake, and we were doing a lot of tours with the kindergarten. So we had like kids like grabbing each other arm, and then two teachers at front, two at the back, and then we walked over and eating ice cream, and the kids were always playing with me. I can't remember the names of those guys, but they were pretty cool. I mean, like we, like children, we played, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But presumably you couldn't invite them back to your home.
No, this was actually, it was sort of a thing that I would say that was maybe like an absolute no-go, because to get on the army base, you would need to get the right papers, because, you know, like they, even they were allies, the Soviets and the East Germans, but still the Germans, East Germans and Russians, or the Soviets, had secrets. And, you know, an army base is say like a secretive unit, say like that. So it's not permitted for everybody to walk in. This is the same like in Germany now. Try to get into an US Army base. You can't. If you don't have the installation pass or the ID, if you're not working, for example, for the AFIS, Army Air Force Exchange Services, or anything like this, you won't be able to get in. So the same was actually with the East Germans and Soviets.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's understood. Now, you said that you had an interesting story about you on the base.
there were actually this is actually three things which I remember very well. They're like I can actually picture them. The first story was actually the house in summer. We open always the windows and doors, you know, like because always fresh air, and there was next to our house, less than 60, 70 meters, the soldiers were doing PT, so physical training. And what they did is actually they took the AKs, the Kalashnikovs, and, you know, they put them together. Like they stand, you need to imagine like a pyramid. So if you have four AKs, you kind of like put them together and they stay like a cone.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And what happens is, you just imagine that. I was like three and a half years old, and I've seen how the soldiers actually were sneaking in the ground and training. So what I did is, from the house, I have seen the AKs, and the soldiers were actually taking a break because nobody was thinking that somebody is taking an AK on the base. So they left them less than 7-8 meters. And they were laying in the grass and enjoying their break, you know, eating and so on. So I actually sneaked up to that AK cone and grabbed one AK next to it. I just grabbed that on the sling and just started to run. And nobody actually recognized that. until my brother was actually looking out of the window and he have recognized that the grass is moving and he could see just the tip of my head and I'm just rushing down. So he ran out and I had that AK in my on the sling. I carried it like almost to the house. So he grabbed me. He was like screaming at me, yelling at me, like, what do you do? So he brought back that AK. I cannot imagine what would happen if the soldier, I would, for example, leave the AK somewhere in the grass. They would find it later, but that guy would probably get court-martialed or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the story I had. So everybody was laughing because he brought it back, but, you know, like still, that was a little shock. And the second story was also, I was, my dad was invited to a maneuver. Well, he needed to be in charge of a small platoon. And the maneuver was one of the largest in East Germany, where actually East Germans, Bulgarians, Romanians, and the Soviets actually participated. So what happens is I was actually sitting in one of those little jeeps, green jeeps. And a rain started. It was actually a storm. What happens is then that there was the driver. I was sitting in the back because my dad asked the guys to bring me to the camp because they have set up a camp and so I can actually go to the tent and start to eat. And two officers and one soldier. So what happens is the jeep actually stuck in the mud and soldiers and officers actually got out of the jeep and started to pull. And I started to scream. I said, like, I want to help you guys. And he's like, you can't, you're small. I mean, like, you get dirty. I said, like, no, you guys get dirty and I want to help you. So I actually got out of the jeep. It was raining. And I started to help the soldiers to push the jeep. And we got out of it. So once we arrived at the camp, my dad was like, what the heck is happening with him? And they told him the story that I helped. So he got me actually, the food and everything. And the soldiers were sitting next to me. And that was the second story said like that. I can remember that like yesterday. Oh, wow. And everybody was proud of me because they have seen me that I, you know, like I'm a kid who is like, I'm not afraid of that. I want to help. And I was also shooting AKs, for example. So my dad actually let me pull the trigger on the training field, you know, so not full automatic. We were shooting semis, but still that was also an experience to me, you know, and that was,
wow.
That's my story, you know.
Like, The jeep story sounds like something you'd read in sort of like a Soviet child storybook of, you know, the child helping the soldiers. And
yeah. Yes. It was amazing because everybody was talking about me. That's like he was not afraid to get out. And I'm still till the day today, I'm not born with a silver spoon in my, you know, where. So I'm not afraid to get dirty in terms of helping, cleaning something, fixing machines, you know. I work in the IT sector, but I'm still love to go out. I like to do things like carrying stuff, fixing stuff. It's kind of like from my childhood, still with me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. Those are great stories. It gives a great image of some aspects of your childhood. Were you a little Oktoberist or not?
No, I was too small for that. I honestly was too small for that. I didn't, it would be a little bit later on, but what happens is in the 90s when the wall collapsed, we had the opportunity to just, we will get there.
Yeah.
I didn't went to the, any of those organizations or stuff like that. I have seen kids with those red hats and the red scarves and stuff like that. But I was actually cooler because my dad actually got me a tanker helmet. Nobody had it back in the days, you know, like try to get a tanker helmet.
Oh, wow, that's one of those leather ones, yeah?
No, it was actually rubber. And he gave me actually the army shovel, which every soldier carried, and he had got me also a sergeant bag where he had the map case. So I was actually the coolest kid in the entire neighborhood. I had that tanker helmet, I had the sergeant bag, and I had the schaufel where I actually played in the, you know, like sandbox, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Building sand castles with it. So that was way better than those Oktoberists.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So what did you do in your spare time when you weren't at school and you were just on the base? I mean, was there a playground you could go to, or what did you do?
Just imagine you are a small kid and you're living on the army base and you have a lot of things around you. Of course, we were, and one thing was not permitted for us is to go to the hangars where tanks were staying, where vehicles, because, you know, it's movement and we're small kids, so somebody can drive over us even without recognizing. Mm-hmm. So next to the house, we had, I don't know how that was in other countries, like in Czechoslovakia, now Slovenia and Slovakia, how it was in the Baltic states or anywhere else. But in East Germany, we had like playgrounds. And what happens is also that there was, they call it kaptorka. That means they were producing their energy to heating the housings and everything. So there was coal, and they put it into a big oven, and that actually transferred the heat to the housings.
Right. So it's communal heating. It was like a furnace or something.
Yes, absolutely correct. Yes. And as kids, we were actually very amazed by that building, and we were actually climbing up the building and playing on the top. Now, you just need to imagine it's around 15 to 16 meters. And we were playing on the top without safety belts. So you can imagine that the mothers were actually very shocked and afraid of that. So we had actually trouble with our moms, so on, not to play that place. So we actually went out. There were like a lot of green areas. And we have built houses in trees, treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
We were just, you know, like driving sometimes even on the jeep. There were soldiers, which actually that was actually so nice for us, because like we could actually sit in a jeep and drive around, and they done that, you know, without having any big limitations. They and mostly we played army, so right.
Old were you when they let you drive a jeep?
I was sitting on the lap, so
and doing the steering, and they would. Okay, I got it.
3.5-4 years, you know, but wow. Can you imagine for a 4-year-old kid driving an army either truck or a jeep?
Yeah,
that is like, that's your day is done for that. You know, like you're gonna go with a big smile.
Yeah, that's all your Christmases come together.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds like an idyllic childhood then. You must have very fond memories of that period.
Yes, I still have. Of course, many things were, you know, sometimes we were crying, we hurt ourselves, but most of that time I can remember without glorifying anybody or any system or anything. I remember the days as very bright and light. I can't even remember the winter times. I just remember it was almost for me like spring.
Yeah.
Very shiny, very warm. You were not afraid of going somewhere. You know, when I was on the base, I played up till 11 o'clock in the night, 11:30. And the only problem we got was actually the moms were actually upset because we were not eating anything. We just grabbed the bread or something and walked outside and played and so on. And the parents were actually cooking stuff and we were just playing around. So there was no, you were not afraid. You didn't have this feeling, you know.
I do hope you enjoyed Andre's story. And don't forget, there's a second episode next week telling the story of his life as a child refugee in West Germany. We have further photos and information in our show notes, which are at coldwarconversations.com/episode and the number 86. This will show as a link in some podcast apps. Don't forget, if you'd like that Cold War Conversations coaster, and the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to keep us on the air, then head over to coldwarconversations.com/donate, or again, click on the link in your podcast app. If you can't wait for the next episode, do visit our Facebook discussion group where Andre, our other guests and listeners like yourselves, continue the Cold War conversation. Just search for Cold War Conversations in Facebook. Thank you very much for listening. It is really appreciated. Goodbye. Not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.